If you happen to be listening to this episode while stuck in a traffic jam, then it turns out you're increasing your chances of getting a divorce. Many of you will be listening to this while traveling. So, are you driving? Are you on the train? Or are you walking? As you're going to hear today, how we get around really does matter. Today, I'm joined by Lior Steinberg, the co-founder of Humankind, an urban design business based in Rotterdam. If you don't know what urban planning is, don't worry, I didn't know either, but Lior does a great job of explaining it. And just before we get into that, I just want to take a moment to thank you all for listening and keeping up with the show now that we're back for our second season. If you're enjoying this show and you want to help spread the positive impacts that my guests are making, then give the show a rating and a review. But even more powerful than that is to simply tell a friend about this show. Send them a link in a WhatsApp. It's more helpful than you realize. Back to the episode. We're going to hear all about the current issues that lie within the designs of our cities and how they can be improved in many substantial ways.
So, short version is that my name is Lior Steinberg. By profession, I'm an urban planner, the co-founder of a Rotterdam-based company called Humankind.
So, you mentioned urban planning. So, straight away, I'm not entirely sure I know what that means. So maybe let's just make sure we're talking the same language. Just explain to me what urban planning is.
Yes, I have to admit that I also didn't know what it means before I discovered it only when I was 21 or something. Before that, I just found it interesting to look around the city, discuss different issues, mostly traffic or greeniness of the city, etc. But I never knew that there is a profession that works on actually designing it or planning it. So when I discovered it, I was already sold on going and studying urban planning. But urban planning is quite different in every country, and it has a lot to do with the legal status or the legal structure of the country and how decisions are being made about the public space, etc. But in general, the profession of urban planning means the process in which decisions are being made on how things in the city should be designed and built, where houses should be placed, how the traffic is going to be managed, where do you place services like schools and shops, and how much you invest in transportation, etc., etc. So it touches on almost everything that has to do that happens outside the houses of people.
And I've obviously followed you online for a little while now, and I've seen loads of these, you know, digital mock-ups and animations of you guys basically just redesigning and reimagining what a city space might look like. So from that, I gather that you guys probably have quite a lot of issues with how cities are designed at the moment and how we've done it up to this point, right? So what have we been getting wrong? You know, where are things going wrong at the moment?
For me, the basic thing that goes wrong in our cities and the way they are planned is that they give just way too much space for private cars. If you look at a normal street, an average street in Europe, you're sitting now in the UK, I'm in the Netherlands, but you can see it all around. The average street, most of the space in that street is dedicated to private vehicles. Either it would be lanes for cars to drive on or parking. And this just means that we are giving way too much space for an item, a device that I think is not very good for us. It's not very good for our health. It's not very good for our quality of life. And if we are designing our entire cities and public space around it, it means that we all need also to use it. It becomes a necessity in our life, and basically we are all kind of like getting hooked on paying so much money on using it in order to get around. And just to be clear from the start, I don't think that car by itself is a bad thing. I think it's a great invention. But if you study how car-oriented city planning has influenced communities and people, the health, the social quality and life of people, you just know that you cannot just keep planning cities around the vehicle and around moving around in cities with a car. So what we are trying to do many times is to show people that a different way is possible. And one way to show it is to just bring examples from places where it's working well. So we are based in the Netherlands. That's why I always love to share pictures of Dutch cities where cars are less welcome, but pedestrians and cyclists are much more welcome. And another way to do it would be to use some digital tools, starting from Photoshop, but also using AI, to really redesign places very quickly and show people how their street could look like. So those are the two main ways to help people maybe rethink their street, their city.
Yeah, I mean, what would you say are like the deeper knock-on consequences of this current status quo of car-led design cities, you know, cities that are designed around this idea that we're going to be bringing our own personal vehicles into them? What are the, you know, I'm guessing there's environmental impacts, like you mentioned health, like what are some specifics that we're talking about there?
It touches almost every aspect of modern life. You touch the environment. Yeah, cars are polluting. Even when they're electric, they are polluting because the pollution that cars create are not only from the engine, they're also from the tires, that the local pollution happens around the car, in the streets where cars are going, but also all the energy produced in order to move many times only one person is just huge. Then you have the traffic accidents. I mean, millions of people are dying every year around the world just because of traffic accidents, let alone the other health problems that are created with the cars, especially air pollution. Then we get to the just city economy or country economy that is paying so much money on just building more roads, maintaining roads, just in order for people to be able to not stand in traffic. You got the well-being of people, the mental health. I mean, sitting in traffic just to get to work every day. This is a horrible thing to do. Yeah. And I know podcasts can really help with that. But I really promise to you that if you sit now in traffic listening to this podcast, your life would be much better if you would add the option to actually safely walk or cycle to work or use fast public transportation. And there is a lot of research showing that stress levels of drivers is getting higher and higher the longer their commute is.
Okay, interesting. So just driving long and sitting in traffic jams, that directly impacts your stress levels?
Absolutely. And there is research showing that the longer your commute, the higher risk you will get a divorce.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, because I mean, imagine sitting in traffic, mostly in traffic jams, especially if you commute to work. I mean, there are almost no city where there is no traffic jam. Cities that are oriented around cars, traffic jams will just show up because everybody tries to get to the same place in one time, right? So you, every day you are sitting in traffic, you cannot plan your activities because you never can actually reliably know when you will get home. You sit in a stationary manner for hours. Sometimes, I mean, in some countries, people might sit 1.5 hours per direction. So it would be 3 hours of their day, which is 20-30% of their waking life, or 20% of the waking time. It is incredible to think. And then when they will get home, they will just be stressed. They don't have time. They are tired. This is a good recipe for an unhappy relationship, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I've certainly felt that. I mean, remember, I don't travel to London very often, but when I do, and I have to sometimes for work. And there's a particular road in London. It's called the Marylebone Road. And every time I'm sat there, inevitably in traffic, doesn't matter what time of day it is, it's always standstill. It's just something about that bit of road, that bit of the journey, that gets me so angry. And I'm sitting there going, why do people choose to do this? I've come here because I've had to, but people are choosing to do this every day, and it makes no sense to me. They must be so unhappy. Like, how is this you know, so many people are spending so much time like this. It's, yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I completely share it with you. I mean, I've been commuting earlier in my life with a car, and it is just terrible. It was terrible, but I didn't realize it. I think that most people don't realize it because they do it daily, or they don't realize how bad it is. Mm-hmm. And I think that, just to come back to your earlier questions, what are the biggest problem of this car-centric design and planning is that it gets so many people hooked in the act of driving and the act of sitting in traffic, that the only way out of the circle, it seems like, for most politicians, is to build more roads, which is more people to drive. Everybody is just sitting in their car waiting for some magic to happen to get them out of this horrible situation. And the only solution that most people and most politicians see is building more and more of those roads, and which just attracts more people, which just creates more traffic, and so on. And that's this vicious cycle of car-oriented planning is in by itself the worst problem in car-oriented planning.
So then, okay, that's, again, sort of talking about the pictures that you like to paint, and so you can show transformation of a city. So give me some examples of changes that you like to make, that you like to design. You know, how do you actually transform a city from you know, one that is very car-centric to one that's, I'm guessing, yeah, as you said, pedestrian, cycling friendly. Paint us a picture of what that looks like. What does that landscape look like?
Yeah, so you're talking about those, I mean, renders where we are creating on potential redesigns of streets. And of course, my favorite renders are the ones that actually become reality. That's what's so nice about urban design and urban planning, is that you are making a picture, then you're going through a long process, but at the end, it's becoming a reality. So that's the best pictures are the ones that actually happen on the streets. But those pictures would look like in city centers, in places where you have housing and shops and offices. I would normally look at the street, at the spaces between the buildings from facade to facade, right? And I would normally look at how it is currently designed and which people are currently using it. So you would see, as we talked before, most of the space is given to cars, very little space is given to people. But you will see how the sidewalks are quite full of people in many cases, because they just try to get either from the car to the office or just from one place to another. So my perfect picture of a city street, and of course it depends on the location and type of people that use it, would be a place with more space for pedestrians, more space for cyclists, more space for public transportation. It would be a place with a lot of green and a lot of spaces to do things that are not only getting from A to B. So a great street would be not only a place that people go through, but also a place that people really feel they want to stay in, where you can grab a coffee or meet a friend or play a game or sport a little bit, or just walk around and look at other people, or sit around and look at other people.
Yeah.
It's a place where you make an appointment to meet someone you know, or maybe see someone you know passing by, someone you didn't see for a long time.
So it's not just a way of getting from A to B. It is a bit of a destination in itself, like encouraging people to enjoy that journey.
Exactly. So if it's your journey to go through it, you will just enjoy it. And it can also be just your destination. And those are actually the best streets we know, right? I mean, if you go to the famous cities from London to Paris to New York, the great streets are the destinations, places where people want to go to. But they're also great for people to go through, in most cases, unless they have too many tourists in there, because they're just make your commute or your journey quite interesting, right? You have some nature, you have interesting things to look at. It's not just a place to go through and get out of.
So I'm really interested to know then, with your work, I think the imagery is great. I think the theory is great. I think it makes a lot of sense to me. I guess what I wonder about is how realistic and practical is it to transform an existing city? Because these things, they get sort of made progressively, don't they? Like a road goes in, there's a building, and then maybe there's a crossing, and then maybe a park goes in, and it over time becomes, maybe you could say, problematic. But I guess maybe it wasn't designed like that from the start. But so how do you, someone like you, come in and get it redesigned? How does that process actually happen?
Yeah, look, first of all, how realistic it is, I think it is realistic. You see cities doing it. Cities are changing and they can do it quite fast. I mean, you see Paris, where they had very low numbers of people cycling only 5 or 10 years ago, and very quickly the mayor has introduced many, many traffic bicycle infrastructure.
Is that right? So, Paris has had a big rise in cycling numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. So I actually have to say that if you go now to Paris, to the main streets of Paris, you will think you're in the Netherlands. There will be so much bicycle traffic. And yeah, London, much slower and only in several places, but you would see some streets that are becoming pedestrianized with bicycle infrastructure. You see that bicycles and pedestrians reappear and return to the streets. So is it possible? Yes, but as you said, it's a very slow process. It's also a difficult process, but it is possible. But then how it looks in reality, it is much more messy than I hoped for it to be.
Right.
Because, and that's also what is nice about urbanism and urban design and planning, is that it is actually touching people's life and many people's life. If you're, live changing a city, that's something crazy. You need to be very visionary and have political power. But just changing a street, imagine the effect it has on people. First of all, you have the people who live there that are used to something. They might be used to parking their car in front of the house, or they might be used to have a green space in front of the house. They are just used to it. That's why they moved there, maybe, or that's what they're just used to for so many years. Then you have the other people in the city that passing by that are also going to be influenced. And then you have different opinions because people are different. So in the same, very same street or even in the very same building, you might have people that would want the street to become more green and others that would want to have another parking lane in the street because they struggle every day to find parking. And then you are coming with this offer or a suggestion based on the strategy of the city, the needs, the budget, and maybe participation with residents, asking them what they want. You're coming with a suggestion, and this suggestion will never satisfy anyone, right? Because you have so many opinions, so many needs, so many wishes. You have some people that are louder than others, some people that have more energy to complain or to fight for their wishes from others. And this makes just the change of one street so complicated.
Yeah.
Then you have then the budget problems, which every change of a street costs much more than you would have imagined. I mean, people think that building, for instance, a playground in a public space is cost a few thousands, but it can cost tens and tens of thousands of euros.
Really?
Yeah, just to have one small playground.
Wow.
You have so many regulations because so many people are going to use this public space. You have rules that the city need to follow in order to introduce those interventions.
Yeah.
And then you have politics. You have actually opinions. Planning is not, in that sense, hard science, like math. There is not right or wrong.
Right.
I mean, I think that the right thing to do is to plan cities that are more oriented for pedestrians, cyclists, and public transportation. But it is not hard science. There is no equation that will show it, especially if you choose to focus on another aspect in the city that might lead you to believe that planning more roads might help your city to grow faster and to help traffic. Mm. So it is also a political, ideological idea. Yeah. And that.
Yeah. I mean, on that, so that that's interesting. Your belief then, as it stands at the moment, how did you end up there? What were you exposed to that took you down that particular road and got you believing that was the right thing to do?
So I've been talking with other urbanists that have the same belief like me, and there is one story that many of them share, mostly the men, the male planners. It always started with traffic for many of them. So at one point, they looked at traffic, they saw traffic jams, and they thought, we have to solve it. And like many, they believed that the solution would be finding something that will make it more efficient. Maybe building more roads, or making cars smaller, or making them self-driving. So I started reading about it even before I knew that urban planning exists. Like, how do you solve traffic? And very quickly I got to Jane Jacobs' writing from the 60s. Already writing there, explaining how building more and more roads just doesn't help with traffic. It just ruins the neighborhood and invites more cars to the city. And I was thinking, it was in the early 2000s, right? I was thinking, she wrote it 50 years ago. She's very much correct. She was not even an urban planner by profession. She was just a journalist living in New York, writing about how neighbors are being ruined across the America for building more roads. And we are still today, 50 years later, doing the same mistakes. And that was just an intuition that we have to do something different. And then when you start to focus and read more, you see that there are a lot of urbanists, politicians, activists, and NGOs, and just citizens that care about their cities, that have been working for decades on trying to reverse this trend of car-focused urbanism. So that's the way I got to it, just by reading a little bit.
Yeah. How do you think it's gone that way if, you know, we're being made aware of this potential issue back in the 50s? Like, is it the case that the road, the idea of building more roads, is a very, very good fix in the short term, and so maybe there's a lack of long-term planning? Is it that, or is it maybe that car drivers make up a big portion of voters and politicians don't want to upset them? Like, what do you think the underlying problem there is and how we've ended up here?
Well, you already gave two explanations, which are absolutely correct. Car drivers are on average, they have more money, with them more powerful people. More powerful, not in the sense of there is any conspiracy behind what they decided. It's just that those are people that are more capable of voicing their concerns and demanding solutions, right? And then, I mean, the more income you have, the more likely you are to vote, the more likely you are to participate in the decision-making process. Then you get this idea, as you mentioned, of the short term, that it is a solution to the symptom. If there is a lot of traffic jams, building another lane will solve it, at least for the very, very short term. And short-term solution is something that many decision makers and politicians like. And I cannot blame them. I mean, they are, part of their job is to be re-elected.
Yeah.
And giving a quick fixes for problems is a way to do that.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit like scratching your wound. It feels good for a little bit, but it just makes the problem worse, right?
That's a really good analogy, yeah. We do see that a lot in politics, don't we? Like, you know... thinking in terms of like 4 or 5 year cycles at most, because that's when the next, you know, re-election is going to be. And that's all the focus about, like, can we win that next election? If we do something now that's going to make us really unpopular in 4 years, even though it might be for the greater good in the next 15 or 20, they just don't make that decision anymore. It's kind of quite sad.
And there is quite a lot of research on the phenomena of building more roads. And the biggest problem is that in the beginning, it does feel better. I mean, you invest money, you get a solution. The problem is that on average, and it depends on location and type of project, within 7 years, the road will be built. So the speed of election is faster than the speed of the traffic coming back to the old situation. There is ever more research about this phenomenon of induced demand and the fact that roads are being filled up faster and faster after they are being built. The latest number I remember is 7 years. Maybe it's getting shorter. So maybe if it will just get faster than the 4 year voting cycle, then we can solve the problem.
So yeah, we need it to get way worse before it can get better. Yeah, maybe
exactly.
That's it. I hope not, but yeah, maybe you're right. I guess that actually does bring me neatly to my next point, which is on kind of the feedback and popularity of this. You've already said that there's these two kind of competing ideas. And so when you present your picture of a city, your ideas, your, you know, imagination of how a city could and should look, I imagine there's a bit of a divide, right? You'll have people that are like, yeah, this is absolutely brilliant. This is what we should do. And then you get the resistance on the other side. People going, no, we like things how they are. We like driving. We want more roads. What are you seeing at the moment in terms of public feedback to your ideas?
Look, it really depends where you do it, what you offer, and is it a concrete proposal that you present to citizens, a concrete real proposal that is about to maybe be executed in the near future? Or is it just a concept I share online? Is it an idea, a dream I have, a project that I was inspired from? If we talk about the letter, the public social media sharing your opinions, I do feel that in recent years it's becoming worse and worse. The divide between, I would say, between the left and the right.
Oh, really? Is it a political issue like that, you think?
Yeah, actually, from the UK, I feel it's the worst. I mean, of course, wow. Because I publish in English, I do get a lot of people from the UK reacting, but the conspiracy theories on the reasons why cities are trying to build more walkable places are insane. You will not believe. I mean,
wow. Right now, what?
Yeah, so I will just give you an example. There is the urban concept, the new concept, I mean, or at least recent popular concept of the 15-minute city. I don't know if you've heard about it.
I've heard of the phrase. I don't really know much about it, but I've heard that it exists. My understanding of it is these don't actually exist or don't yet, or I don't know enough about them, so hopefully you can tell me what that means.
So just as the concept itself is nothing new in the sense of we need to plan places where you can just reach your destination relatively in short time. And the idea of 15-minute cities is that in our cities we will be able to reach school, work, the shops, by walking or by cycling or by public transportation within 15 minutes. And if you look at great cities around the world, they are 15-minute cities, or at least they are 15-minute neighbors, right? If you live in the city center of Rotterdam, where I live, Amsterdam, I can reach everywhere within 15 minutes. I can cycle to my office and it will be a good 5 kilometers, which will take me 20 minutes. I can walk to the supermarket just around the corner. If you live in a car-oriented cities, it's probably impossible. You will need to drive to most places. It will take you many times more than 15 minutes. So the concept is just let's plan more mixed-use, diverse, dense cities where people have the possibility to reach to many destinations within 15 minutes. And the idea is that 15 minutes is something that everybody can do on a regular pace. And regardless of your ability and your age, you can just reach to those places. But there is a lot of conspiracy theory mostly in the extreme right, that the 15-minute city is a conspiracy of the global elites to put people in ghettos where they can reach, they are allowed only to walk 15 minutes around them. That's it. And I you're smiling, and I was also very much, and I still am, amazed by the fact that people can believe it. But you will not believe how many people do follow this idea, how many populist politicians are using this, including the very much prime minister of UK that maybe is not calling the conspiracy of 15-minute cities, but does echo many of their beliefs. Mm. And sometimes I'm getting on LinkedIn comments by people that truly believe that there is a conspiracy to put them in ghettos. I press on their profile to see what they do, and they are people who work in pretty good jobs in famous companies, and you will just not believe how many people hold this belief.
Wow. So it's a belief that instead of allowing us the ease and the well-being of being able to get to pretty much anything we want easily within 15 minutes, it's actually the opposite. It's to confine us within a 15-minute radius of a... Wow.
And I think that this leads me to this second part, which is what happens when you present it to real people, not online.
Yeah.
Where it's going to affect their life. And that's where you really see that a lot of the fears of people from change comes because sometimes they just have a really legitimate fear or objection. I mean, you're going to maybe remove some parking spaces from the streets, and they might be just afraid that they will not have a place to park. And sometimes you see that they just against it ideologically because they are used to the way things are and they're just against any change. And you just need to sometimes, I wouldn't say ignore, but just, okay, listen to objections that don't make sense and understand them. And sometimes you need to also understand that some people are really afraid and have needs and try to think together with them what can make their life better within a new design of a city.
Yeah, I think this is me going quite personal now for me, which I don't do a huge amount on this show, but I think it might be worth it in this context. This is one of those conversations where actually I find myself so torn. I know what I like personally, and I can absolutely see all of your points and this greater good. And I like the idea of the greater good, even if that comes as a sacrifice for me personally. And I do think where I'm at the moment, and this is me being so selfish and short-sighted, but it would feel like a sacrifice in the sense that I love driving. I love being in my car. I love that personal bit of space. I love putting the podcast and the music on. I love zoning out. I love cars. I love, you know, the act of driving. And so initially when I hear about, you know, cities here that are taking these steps to make, you know, to be less car friendly, I think Oxford is a good example. Like, that has been for a long time very hard to drive around Oxford. It stops me wanting to go there in my car, which I guess is kind of the point. I guess in the short term, the initial knee-jerk reaction I have probably isn't a positive one. Like I say, it does feel like it's going to take that away from me. But I can't ignore and get away from all of the facts you presented. Like, people driving around personally is not sustainable. And we're doing it on, you know, bigger and bigger scale. Traffic is the worst. Cars are very expensive and the maintenance is killer. And yeah, maybe there's a better way. And so what would you say to someone like me who is kind of quite hung up on the idea of driving and the personal freedom I feel like that gives me to get from door to door in my own comfort and leisure? Do you know what I mean? I'm sure maybe if someone that drives and has driven, you could see that, right? Like, why people might be quite clung on to the idea of driving themselves around.
Absolutely. I think you mentioned it at the end of the question, the freedom to get from door to door. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is something that not only you want, everybody wants. We want to be able to go to places around on our own terms, whenever we want, do it in a comfortable manner and hopefully also cheap way. And the thing about driving is that you already notice it. You just cannot do it. I mean, you cannot go to Oxford. You're just unable, because if everybody will try to enter Oxford with a car, Oxford will be clogged. And that's why they had to at least limit access of car from some of the streets or some of the areas in the city. And I think that there are hardly no cities that had perfect traffic conditions, no traffic jams, no traffic accidents. They just decided one day, let's now close the area for cars. Normally, the situation was bad enough, traffic was bad enough for cities to just try to figure out what is another solution for the city. So if you live, and from your question, I imagine you live a little bit outside of the city or the city center.
Yeah, I don't live within walking distance of very much. You know, it's houses. I live in a big housing estate. And so anything like, you know, shops or the nearest public transport, like train station, the nearest train station for me is about an hour's walk away, if you can believe that or not.
So someone like you who lives in such a place, I would never demand you to walk anywhere, everywhere, because it's just impossible. You cannot walk every day hours in order to get to the train station to go to work. But I think that's, not all of us can live like that. There is just not enough space in the UK for everybody to live in a detached house far away from everything. And I'm talking more about people living more in an urban or suburban area where walking, cycling and public transportation is an option.
Yeah.
And I will even flip the coin and say that everybody driving is just not an option because there is not enough space.
Mm.
So if I lived where you live, I would probably buy a car or even two, and I would enjoy very much, because probably you also don't suffer for too much traffic. congestion.
Yeah, in daily life. Not compared to the big cities. Yeah, no, it's.
I mean, I don't think that's very urgent then to try to get those places car free. I mean, I would be, I would wish for most people to be able also to walk to places because not everybody can drive, right? Children cannot drive, some elderly cannot drive. Some people have physical problems, they cannot drive, or mental issues, they cannot drive. So I would hope that everybody would have the possibility to go to the supermarket or to the shop or to the school without driving. But I will definitely not going to a village and force everybody to sell their car because it's just not realistic.
Yeah, that's it. It is a balance, isn't it? I mean, I would say, you know, I can walk to the shops, actually, that they are close, and I do that quite often. I suppose where it gets quite interesting for me, actually, and probably for a lot of people, certainly in the UK, maybe elsewhere, but if there was a train station close to me, I would absolutely get the train, okay? My nearest, closest city that I go to frequently is Cardiff, okay?
Yeah.
Cardiff is a nightmare to drive around. I don't want to take my car there. But because the train station for me is an hour's walk, I probably am going to drive to Cardiff even though I don't want to. If I had a train station that's accessible, I would absolutely be getting the train to Cardiff every time because then I'd get there and I'm on foot and it's you know, it's built for that. So how do you sort of think about intercity transportation? I think once we're in the city, and that's where you're talking about, you know, urban planning, but what do you think about sort of long distances getting from one city to another? Do you think that's more where trains come in? You know, maybe even then cars aren't the answer, clogging up motorways.
Yeah, the way you framed your questions and the way most people think about the mobility is very personal. So you describe the decisions you are making, right? You there is a situation that is presented to you. You live somewhere. There is a train station very far away from it. And you have a car and you have the option to walk, but it will just take you an hour. It is true that you've made many of the decisions that led you to this situation, right? Maybe you decided to move to that place. Maybe you decided to not live in another place.
Yeah.
But it's very easy to forget and necessary to remind that a lot of the decisions were made for you by the government, by decision makers. For instance, investing more money in roads than train.
Yeah.
If they decided to actually build another train station closer to you or a proper bus line that comes every 10 minutes and brings you from your neighbor to the train station, you might have made a different decision. So probably within the situation in your life, you're making, because you are a smart person that tries not to spend too much time, money, and energy on getting from A to B, in most cases, you're choosing the mobility that works best for you. And I'm not saying that people should choose mobility that doesn't work for them. I'm saying that we need to provide them options to choose the right modes of transit. So if we talk about intercity travel or cross-city travel, the train is a great example for a mode of transportation that requires a lot of investment by the government. But once it's built, it is a very efficient mode of transportation because it can bring a lot of people very quickly inside cities. And if you build train stations or mass transit infrastructure that connects between towns and between villages and of course between big cities, you will get much more people feeling less dependent on personal car because they will have this option to maybe walk or take the bus or cycle to the train station, then just sit on the train. And when train works good, it's actually much more pleasant than a car, in my opinion. The train can be much nicer many times. You can work also on the train or watch a film. And this is therefore not a surprise that in cities that have proper train connections, in countries that have proper train connections, a lot of drivers will give up on driving and move to the train. So you're making probably the right decision to choose your car to go to Cardiff. But someone has made a decision much before it and didn't give you the true option. That's the sad part.
Yeah. And the really sad thing maybe about that example that I didn't tell you is that I live in a new build housing estate. This house is 5 years old. So that decision was made not very long ago. You know, that we were that's modern times, right, where that planning was happening, and a train station did not go into that plan one bit. Thousands of new houses, yeah, and there's no train station. Yeah, so I think you're absolutely right, maybe even more so than you realised. I'll tell you what I'd really like to do is, I like to look at success stories and where this sort of stuff is working well, and you pointed out earlier, you know, cities around the world where this is going well. I wonder whether you're able to tell me about somewhere that you and humankind have worked on. Maybe there's a specific area or road where this has been realized, this vision, and you can go there and you can stand there and you can see, like, wow, like we did this, like, it looks great now, and this is what's happening.
Yeah, so we are based in Rotterdam, and we've been doing many projects with the city. Of course, we cannot claim any of the great projects in the city only on for ourselves, because it is always a collaboration between different organizations and, of course, the city, the municipality. But there are several streets in the city where they didn't have proper bicycle infrastructure, and the city wanted to introduce something, but got a lot of objection because it required removing car parking. That's what happens in many cities. You need to remove car parking because there is not enough space to build something new. And if you want to introduce, for instance, a bicycle path, a protected proper bicycle infrastructure, you will need to get rid of car infrastructure. And in many cities, it means parking. Then you will have residents and shop owners objecting this change because they see it as something that maybe hurt their quality of life, and for many shop owners also maybe the ability of clients to arrive there. In Rotterdam, we were part of a big project called Happy Streets, where we were just saying we cannot just discuss a way out of this argument between people against and people in favor. We can just try it out. So instead of making a decision and building a proper bike lane, let's just say that for the coming few months, we will have a temporary bike lane. We will remove the parking for a while and introduce infrastructure for cyclists. And then we will just see how it works. We will see if more or less shoppers are coming, if people feel more comfortable on the street, if the street is safer for pedestrians, cyclists, and cars. And in more cases than not, of course, the intervention worked because we introduced it in city centers where anyway a lot of people use public transportation, they're walking, they're cycling. And the moment you introduce the proper bike infrastructure, or at least a temporary one that works okay, you just saw more people coming to the street, which means more shoppers, which means more children out there, more people feeling comfortable. And after those projects succeed, many times the city will turn them into permanent bike lanes, which with much less objection and much more support.
That's really cool. So you're able to, you know, test and show stakeholders in these projects how it will work before you really commit to making it a permanent fixture in their lives, and just show them the results and say, look, there you go, do you want to keep this or not?
Exactly. And also, by the way, and I'm going to say something that sounds contradictory, sometimes it didn't work, it failed. And I see it as a success because we didn't need to spend so much money on building the infrastructure just to discover that it doesn't work the way we thought. It's a quick test. We saw if it worked or not. And when it didn't, we could flip it back or the city could flip it back to the original state and think about another way to improve the street.
Yeah. Learning from those. You know, sort of failures is actually really important, isn't it? Learning what didn't work and why, and using that to go into the next one. I think that's a great way of making anything better, really, isn't it? That was really fascinating. The last thing that I like to do on this show is to give you a chance to speak about, nominate someone that you think is making a really positive impact in the world with their work, and perhaps that's someone that you know personally within your network or not externally. It could be an individual, an organization, a business, someone that you think is really going out of their way to make a difference.
It's a good question. I mentioned beforehand Jane Jacobs. She's a writer. She passed away years ago, so it's not someone active right now, but work truly influenced not only me, but many, many urbanists around the world. And if you're just interested in the topic of how cities affect our life and also those decisions that have been made before you made your own decisions, I would definitely recommend reading book, Death and Life of Great American Cities, written in the early 60s, sounded like it was written yesterday, and it's really well written, funny, witty, and really well written. But if I can nominate or mention another for me, sort of an urban hero or someone that inspires me, it would be architect Jan Gehl from Copenhagen, which actually has been active also in the 70s, 60s, I'd say 70s, and still is active today, and has also inspired many by his wonderful visual books about cities. One of them is Life Between Buildings. But just thinking about cities really from the human scale, he reinvented a lot of the ways urbanists are working, and is still active by either inspiring people, but also by his practice changing places. The most famous one is Times Square in New York.
Oh, wow.
Recently turned from intersection into an actual square with space for people. And his office, it's a big office, active all around the world, but the person himself is for me an inspiration.
Wow. Lovely. Thank you so much for that, Leo. That's been great. I really, really appreciate your time. And I look forward to keeping up with your updates and seeing the roads and cities that you transform into, you know, really, really nice spaces. So thank you so much.
Thanks very much for the invite and also for inspiring the world with a new way to think about positive impact. Thank you.
I try my best. That's all we can do. Thank you.
I don't know about you, when I take the time to look around at the cities I spend time in, I realise just how grey they are, like one big concrete block, and I would genuinely love to see more greenery. Think about the difference between many of our workplaces and where we go on holiday. We often work in built-up areas and associate these areas with stress. So we aim to get away from all that by going to places that are beautiful, quiet, green. Do these two environments have to be this different? What if where we worked looked more like where we relax? It appears to me that this is part of the vision for urban planners like Lior, and I am here for it. I genuinely think more places looking like the renders that humankind create, check them out on Lior's LinkedIn, by the way, the link is in the show notes, then the world would be a better place. Less stress, slower, less intense, less busy, cleaner air, safer. That all sounds pretty good to me. But I want to know what you think. I imagine many of you might have some objections or questions about this one, so please do share them with me. Let's keep the conversation going. You can get in touch on cpi@soundquake.co.uk. Until next time, take care of yourselves, and next time you're commuting, take a look around. What do you see? And what would you like to change?